The North. Section 1. The Industrial Revolution in America.
If you were there. You live in a small Pennsylvania town in the 1780s. Your father is a blacksmith, but you earn money for the family too. You raise sheep and spin their wool into yarn. Your sisters knit the yarn into warm wool gloves and mittens. You sell your products to merchants in the city. But now you hear that someone has invented machines that can spin thread and make cloth. Would you still be able to earn the same amount of money for your family? Why?
Building background. In the early 1700s, making goods depended on the hard work of humans and animals. It had been that way for hundreds of years. Then, new technology brought a change so radical that it is called a revolution. It began in Great Britain and soon spread to the United States. Beginning of the Industrial Revolution. At the beginning of the 1700s, the majority of people in Europe and the United States were farmers. They made most of what they needed by hand. For example, female family members usually made clothing. First, they used a spinning wheel to spin raw materials, such as cotton or wool, into thread. Then, they used a hand loom to weave the thread into cloth. Some families produced extra cloth to sell to merchants, who sold it for a profit. In towns, a few skilled workers made goods by hand in their own shops. These workers included blacksmiths, carpenters, and shoemakers. Their ways of life had stayed the same for generations. A need for change. By the mid-1700s, however, changes in Great Britain led to a greater demand for manufactured goods. As agriculture and roads improved, cities and populations grew. Overseas trade also expanded. Traditional manufacturing methods did not produce enough goods to meet everyone's needs. People began creating ways to use machines to make things more efficient. These changes led to the Industrial Revolution, a period of rapid growth in using machines for manufacturing and production that began in the mid-1700s. Textile industry. The first important breakthrough of the Industrial Revolution took place in how textiles, or cloth items, were made. Before the Industrial Revolution, spinning thread took much more time than making cloth. Several workers were needed to spin enough thread to supply a single weaver. In 1769, Englishman Richard Arkwright invented a large spinning machine called a water frame. The water frame could produce dozens of cotton threads at the same time. It lowered the cost of cotton cloth and increased the speed of textile production. The water frame used flowing water as its source of power. Merchants began to build large textile mills or factories near rivers and streams. The mills were filled with spinning machines. Merchants began hiring people to work in the mills. Additional improvements also speeded up the spinning process. Britain soon had the world's most productive textile manufacturing industry. New machines and processes. New machines encouraged the rise of new processes in business and manufacturing. As the machines used to make products became more efficient, the processes involved changed dramatically. Slater and his secrets. The new textile machines allowed Great Britain to produce cloth faster and cheaper than other countries could. To protect British industry, the British Parliament had made it illegal for skilled mechanics or machine plants to leave the country. Disguised as a farmer, Samuel Slater, a skilled British mechanic, immigrated to the United States after carefully memorizing the designs of textile mill machines. Soon after arriving, he sent a letter to Moses Brown, who owned a textile business in New England. Slater claimed he could improve the way textiles were manufactured in the United States. Brown had one of his workers test Slater's knowledge of machinery. Slater passed. Brown's son, Smith Brown, and son-in-law, William Almy, formed a partnership with Slater. In 1793, they opened their first mill in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. The production of cotton thread by American machines had begun. Slater ran the mill and the machinery. He was confident that his new machines would work well. "If I do not make as good yarn as they do in England, I will have nothing for my services, but will throw the whole of what I have attempted over the bridge," Samuel Slater, quoted in The Ingenious Yankees by Joseph and Francis Guise. Slater's machines worked, and the Pawtucket Mill became a success. Slater's wife also invented a new cotton thread for sewing. In 1798, Slater formed his own company to build a mill. By the time he died in 1835, he owned all or part of 13 textile mills. Other Americans began building textile mills. Most were located in the Northeast. In New England, in particular, merchants had the money to invest in new mills. More importantly, this region had many rivers and streams that provided a reliable supply of power. Fewer mills were built in the South, partly because investors in the South concentrated on expanding agriculture. There, agriculture was seen as an easier way to make money. A manufacturing breakthrough. Despite these great changes, most manufacturing was still done by hand. In the late 1790s, the U.S. government worried about a possible war with France, so it wanted more muskets for the army. Skilled workers made the parts for each weapon by hand. No two parts were exactly alike, and carefully fitting all the pieces together took much time and skill. As a result, American gun makers could not produce the muskets quickly enough to satisfy the government's demand. Factories needed better technology, the tools used to produce items or to do work. In 1798, inventor Eli Whitney tried to address some of these problems. Whitney gave officials a proposal for mass-producing guns for the U.S. government using water-powered machinery. Whitney explained the benefits of his ideas. "I am persuaded that machinery moved by water and adapted to this business would greatly reduce the labor and facilitate or ease the manufacture of this article." Eli Whitney, quoted in Technology in America, edited by Carol W. Purcell. Whitney also came up with the idea of using interchangeable parts, parts of a machine that are identical. Using interchangeable parts made machines easier to assemble and broken parts easier to replace. Whitney promised to build 10,000 muskets in 2 years. The federal government gave him money to build his factory, and in 1801, Whitney was called to Washington, D.C. to give a demonstration. Whitney stood before President John Adams and his Secretary of War. He had an assortment of parts for 10 guns. He then randomly chose parts and quickly assembled them into muskets. To the audience's amazement, he repeated the process several times. Whitney's influence. Whitney had proven that American inventors could improve upon the new British technology. Machines that produced matching parts soon became standard in industry. Interchangeable parts sped up mass production, the efficient production of large numbers of identical goods. Slow start in manufacturing. Despite the hard work of people such as Samuel Slater and Eli Whitney, manufacturing in the United States grew slowly. In 1810, Secretary of the Treasury Albert Gallatin suggested some reasons why there were so few factories in the United States. The reasons include the superior attractions of agricultural pursuits or farming, the abundance of land compared with the population, the high price of labor, and the want or lack of sufficient capital or investment. Albert Gallatin, quoted in Who Built America, edited by Bruce C. Levine and others. Gallatin and others believed that few people would choose to work in a factory if they could own their own farm instead. In Great Britain, on the other hand, land was more scarce and more expensive than in the United States. As a result, fewer people were able to own farms. British factory workers generally were willing to work for lower wages than factory workers in the United States were. Because British manufacturers had plenty of factory workers with technical skills, they could produce large amounts of goods less expensively than most American businesses could. Consequently, they could charge lower prices for the goods. Lower British prices made it difficult for many American manufacturers to compete with British companies. This situation, in turn, discouraged American investors from spending the money needed to build new factories and machinery. As a result, only a few industries had found a place in the American economy. These included cotton goods, flour milling, weapons, and iron production. These circumstances began to change around the time of the War of 1812. Since the 1790s, wars between European powers had interfered with U.S. trade. American customers were no longer able to get all the manufactured goods they were used to buying from British and European manufacturers. Then, during the War of 1812, British ships blockaded eastern seaports, preventing foreign ships from delivering goods. Americans began to buy the items they needed from American manufacturers instead of from foreign suppliers. As profits for American factories grew, manufacturers began to spend more money expanding their factories. State banks and private investors began to lend money to manufacturers for their businesses. At the same time, many Americans began to realize that the United States had been relying too heavily on foreign goods. If the United States could not meet its own needs, it might be weak and open to attack. Former President Thomas Jefferson, who had once opposed manufacturing, changed his mind. He, too, realized that the United States was too dependent on imports. To be independent for the comforts of life, we must fabricate or make them ourselves. We must now place the manufacturer by the side of the agriculturist or farmer. Thomas Jefferson, from the writings of Thomas Jefferson, edited by P.L. Ford. In February 1815, New Yorkers celebrated the end of the War of 1812 and the return of free trade. The streets were decorated and filled with merchants whose ships were loaded with goods. "With peace and commerce, America prospers," declared one display. Eager business people prepared to lead the United States into a period of industrial growth. They urged Northern politicians to pass higher tariffs on foreign goods to protect American companies. Summary and preview. The Industrial Revolution started with the textile industry in England, but soon spread to the United States. In the next section, you will learn about how the spread of factories changed the working lives of many Americans. But first, review the main ideas of this section. Then take some time to demonstrate what you've learned by answering the section assessment questions.